Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff and you can hear me loud and clear, I hope, and I'm hoping I can hear this gentleman loud and clear on the other side of the video stream.
Let's hope so.
Introduce yourself, my friend.
I am Brett, and hopefully you can hear me.
I
just
can hear
crystal
you.
Clear.
You are
well. That's good.
Crisp, Frankie.
Crisp, Frankie. Crisp.
Have you grown a mustache? Because you look a bit like Neville Southall, didn't you?
Well, he was a good goalkeeper. Wore Neville.
You look like Neville Southall in 3 years' time.
I haven't grown a mustache, but what the problem? You always mention that I am sitting in Rout of Darkness, and my beard is half grey now. So I have a grey beard and a black tash. So that's probably what you can see, I would think.
Why are you always in the darkness, though? I don't understand.
I just think it's the lighting setup, if I can call it that.
Does it get you in
this room?
It's the atmosphere that it creates.
It does. I try and intimidate you.
Well, I thought it made you a bit more sensual.
Good. I like that. I'm a sensual man.
I know this. I just wish.
Hey, I just wish. You mentioned crisps.
Yes.
Have you seen that the Quavers have brought back the prawn cocktail?
Crisps. Well, they haven't over here. I don't even think you can get Quavers here. So,
you know,
I'm going to go to bed in turmoil tonight.
I love them crisps.
I didn't.
The
know
other
that.
Crisps.
Have
they
got the dog back to promote them?
The dog.
There was like a cartoon dog and that was the Quavers mascot, wasn't
was
it?
No, I don't
great
think so.
Fella.
Have I told you about my fascination with tomato crisps?
No. Right, we're going to talk a little bit about food because we've been having a bit of Twitter food stuffs tweets today.
But
let's start. You tell us about your tomato crisps and I'll tell you my thoughts on them.
Right. Well, I love tomato crisps. I mean, I think it's a Christmas thing. My dad loves tomato crisps. Tomato crisps. Tomato crisps. But they don't make them anymore. They've stopped making them. Tomato crisps.
Tomato crisps. Like Russian Christmas is the January the 8th. Russian Christmas is January the 8th. Tomato Christmas is like March the 10th or something like that. Where they all get together.
They do all the tomatoes for a big celebration.
I'm going to give you a leaf of basil this year. It'll really set you up.
So at Tomato Christmas, that's what we call it in this house anyway. if we do manage to get the tomato crisps, because they stopped making them. They keep doing that, you know. Because I like this cider called Blood Orange Cider by Bulmers. I loved it. I drank
it
so much of
blood
it, and it turned orange. I've never had one.
Blood orange. It's stupid, isn't it? Because everybody knows blood's red. Doesn't make any sense.
It is. Daft gets. So, they stopped
making
that.
Maybe that's why they took it off the shelves. Lads, we've made a big mistake here.
Because believe it.
Have any of them been sent out yet? Yeah, for about a year. Why did nobody say that orange is my fucking orange?
So I think the moral of the story is that anything I like, they stop making for some reason.
Well, here, you can send me some prawn cocktail quavers and I'll send you some tomato crisps because I don't think it's too far. I'm not going too far by saying that tomato crisps are rife in this place.
Rife. They always seem to be, like, if you go to Spain or whatever, you can always get tomato crisps.
I don't like them, but a couple of the people in the office love them, so they often turn up, like, when people bring, like, snacks and stuff in. People often bring tomato crisps. What's your worst crisp?
For a job in your office.
What's your worst crisp? You're welcome.
Plain
crisps. Really?
Rubbish.
Just salt.
What's the point in them?
Well, I like them, but I like them. They're good for, like, putting in a sandwich, aren't they?
Nah, because you don't put crisps in sandwiches, because that's wrong.
In a chicken
sandwich. Do you know what Wall Lass does? She puts pizzas in sandwiches.
Well, we might as well say we asked some people, some questions, ask us any daft questions again. Not many people got back in touch this week, to be honest. But good old Leon did. And Leon said, what is the best thing to have between two slices of bread? And your wife says a slice of pizza.
Yeah, slice of pizza. She has pizza sandwiches with vinegar.
Really? Fucking hell. That's really, really stupid.
Well, not according to her. She loves it. What's her favourite thing?
I think we should get her on and talk to her about it 1 week.
I'm sure she's going to be over the moon. You've just called her stupid.
I said the decision is stupid.
Here she is. He's just called you stupid.
I haven't. Get her on. Get her on.
What are you going to say to her? No, you got to see.
Lisa, you need to defend you. Let her hear it.
Well, what's... Lisa... Nothing wrong with the pizza sandwich.
But with vinegar on.
Salt and vinegar on the plate, and then I dip it in.
Dip it in vinegar. Vinegar's not a dip. It's too loose.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, bye. I think that means I've won that argument there because she retreated, so, you know.
Yeah, she's waiting outside, just there.
Tell him I can't afford foie gras.
She can't afford foie gras.
I can hear that as well as I can hear you, so that's all.
Oh, well, that's all right then. I've got some questions. They've replied to me. Maybe they just keep away from you, Cliff. That's what I think.
Okay, go on.
So what was Leon's question?
Leon, he had two questions. What was the best thing you can put between two slices of bread? Lisa thinks a pizza. You are wrong to say she put vinegar in the slices of bread. She puts it on the plate and then the bread goes on the vinegar. What's your best thing between two slices of bread?
Are we talking about the sex games?
No, well, I've decided I wasn't going to go down that route, but you've done it anyway.
You knew I was going to say that.
I know, well, I thought I can't just make stupid jokes about that. It's so obvious.
Not
too obvious for you.
No, not too obvious for me. No way. I like just a nice ham sandwich.
Okay.
I'm a very plain man.
Talk me through the ham.
Talk me through the ham.
Yeah.
Well, for one, I don't like to touch it.
Well, we've established that.
What do you
get? Tweezers. Tweezers with a slice of wafer thin ham. Just lay it on.
Wafer. You know them tongs? I use a pair of tongs.
Okay.
That's what I use.
So what's the ham? Wafer thin ham from like a little packet from Asda, or are you getting it from the deli counter? On the bone? Off the bone?
No. Breaded? Not like a Christmas ham.
Breaded? Or is it cured? No, is it fucking smoked?
I don't purchase the ham. The wife purchases the ham because she picks the best cuts.
Okay.
And she
doesn't
like a fatty ham.
Okay. So yeah. Well, I agree. I would peel the ring of fat off if it was around the outer rim.
She gets the good stuff, and I buy like the cheap stuff. So because I'm up with that.
I've got a place for all hams. To be honest, I can take the cheapest way for thin stuff. I can take the expensive stuff, obviously.
I don't like the ones that are very slimy.
Yeah,
slimy
I don't like the slimy, and sometimes they've got a bit of like gristle in. I don't like that. I don't. Yeah, that's when you know you've gone too cheap. When you
You definitely
surprisingly,
are.
It's not very nice when there's about 100 tiny thin slices in a packet for a quid.
It's not the best. What about you? Do you like pickle lily?
I don't mind it, but I've only found it in later years.
Yeah. That's another thing that my dad likes, and he also likes haslet.
Haslet is like pork, like brains and shit like that mashed up. Isn't
I've
it,
got no idea what it is.
I think it's like absolutely leftover bits of pork after you've had the ham and then molded into the shape of ham.
After the murders occurred, isn't it?
After the murders occurred, all the bodies have been carved up and discarded of. If there's any like
left,
if there's any debris that goes into haslet, I think.
I thought that was beef burgers, like cow's eyes in that, and the beef burgers.
Whatever, nice, aren't they?
Who cares?
A pie sandwich is obviously the best thing between two slices of bread.
That is stupid, Paul.
You'll get Lisa back. A mince pie sandwich, buttered bread, bit of brown sauce, and a bag of crisps. Opened and just decanted onto the side of the plate. Preferably, I'm going to go with some kind of ridged crisp. And for these purposes, salt will do just fine.
Ooh, I don't like the idea of that. Don't you think that the outer pie, the crust of the pie or the pastry is enough and you don't need to encrust it in bread?
But it's the combination of the two things, isn't it? That's what makes it.
No, I don't like that.
It's like, hang on. Look at the royals who have a pheasant in a chicken, in a goose, in a fucking ostrich. Nobody's saying you don't eat all that outer layers because the little one does the job. Do they?
It's look at excess. The state of them. Look
this is the this the is my excess.
You're living in excess, are you?
I'm living in excess this by having bread around the...
One Christmas, we got a three meat sort of thing.
Okay. Was Christmas. It a tomato and Christmas?
It was a tomato Christmas too.
Did you have a cherry tomato in a normal tomato in a beef tomato?
Yeah. What's a beef tomato?
Just a bigger tomato.
What's that?
Just bigger?
Is it? Never heard of that. This is just a tomato?
Yeah, just a bigger tomato. What's I don't know why it's called beef. I've always wondered why it's called beef.
We need to find that out. But anyway, it was for Iceland. It wasn't one main meat for tomato Christmas.
Okay.
It was like a side meat. But it had like turkey, pork, and someone else. I don't know what it was. But like it was all meshed together. It was awful. It was absolutely disgusting. More like just how did they get meats to combine?
Three things of meat just like mixed it was together.
Like, you know, like that ice cream that where it's got strawberry and vanilla and chocolate.
Yeah.
Is it Neapolitan?
It is Neapolitan, yeah. Well done.
It was like that. It was like that, but in a meat.
Nothing like joining stuff. It. Like, I mean, it was all joined, like nothing separating it.
You know what? I'm sad that I've brought it up, actually, because I've blocked it out of my mind. I can't remember much about it, apart from the fact that it was hideous. So I remember that much about it. It was absolutely awful.
Well, Leon also asked to move on. Leon also asked, what is there anything you like that's weird? I think we know Lisa's. And maybe my pie sandwich is a weird thing that I like and other people might think it's weird. What about you?
I don't like anything weird because it's not weird to me.
What other people would consider weird is what you said.
What, like, what I like? Is he asking about,
Do you eat anything that you like? Do you eat anything that you like?
Other people would consider weird. I didn't hear that.
Well, it's all about food.
Yeah, let's...
This is our foodie episode.
This is all about. It's a foodie episode, is it? Yeah. I was wondering why you're asking about food. Yeah, I tell you what, them hairy bikers, they look nice on the telly, but they'd put your windows out, wouldn't they? Them hairy bikers. I think it's all a show. I think they're ruffians. I think they'll kick your head in, eh? Anyway, I don't eat anything out of the ordinary. I'm a very plain man. I don't eat anything at all. That's out the ordinary.
Yeah, anyway, before we move off from the food, because I feel like this is a one-sided conversation about food. This is you. I like the most plain things, and my wife has to buy it, make it, and serve it to us. She probably fucking puts it in your mouth as well, or blends it so you don't even have to chew it.
Yeah, this is you. Yeah, this is you. Yeah, this is you. It's you, that
one
is.
One more thing. You said you were going
to
have...
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
You're going to have a big reveal on the mince front.
Oh, yeah, that. Well, I got a lot of abuse. From fear of the touching the meats from various people last week. But the thing is, it was a lie. I didn't even touch the meat. I got the wife to do it.
You're too afraid to touch it.
I was too afraid to touch it, so I didn't even do it. No, I didn't. Well, I didn't even touch the meat. So there's the reveal.
Oh, I tell you what, do you want to hear about the Sri Lankan cook update?
Update? Have I previously heard of them?
Well, I said last week there was a Sri Lankan lady came in.
Oh, yes, you did tell us about that, didn't you?
Well, I've just had some lovely...
Yes, you did tell us that. Go on.
Lovely, lovely spicy prawns that she made, which were delicious. One of the other tubs, right. I had a little look inside. She's just chopped up loads of hot dogs.
It's just laziness.
There's like sauce and that on it, but... I don't think that's a classic Sri Lankan dish.
Still, is it?
And also, you know what?
You want to get sacked.
No, but you know, like, she's here to make, like, food, like traditional food and stuff that I can't make myself. The hot dogs are in the fridge for when I just want a hot dog. Uh-huh. I don't want the two things mixed. Now I haven't got any hot dogs.
it's our own dish that she's just made up, you see.
I haven't tried it yet. I tell you what it looks like. Tomorrow night I'm gonna try and put it, I'm gonna make baked potatoes and put it on there because it looks like it would be good on there.
You're gonna make baked potatoes and
I'm
put
gonna
it on
bake
top
potatoes and put the these like what I presume are spicy hot dogs on top of the
You're
potatoes.
Not gonna make baked potatoes.
What do you think? What do you mean make? I'm gonna bake them.
Yeah.
How else do you do it? Like,
that's what you said. I'm going to make baked potatoes. Uh-huh. I don't know. You bake them?
Yeah,
but you said you're going to make baked potatoes.
Uh-huh, I am.
Well, that's all right. That's all I said.
You've got a second guess of yourself.
You're very defensive, aren't you?
Second guess of yourself. I feel like I'm being gaslit by you. I don't know whether I'm coming or going.
I do not gaslight. I don't do that.
You would say that.
Well, I would, wouldn't I?
Go on, tell us.
Yeah, we had questions from Davey, one mate Davey, okay. Who also wrote a nice thing on the iTunes reviews and stuff like that. The things that we live for, Cliff. Mm-hmm. You wrote a nice one. Did you see it?
I had a look at it after you said, but I'll leave it to you to read out, obviously.
Yeah, I'll read it out. Davey has said, "This is my favourite podcast," which is very kind of him. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but was delighted to come across this one. It's like listening to your two mates chatting about nostalgic things you love, such as retro TV and games. Very funny, down-to-earth lads. No egos. He's wrong about that with
you. Doesn't know you, does he?
And comfortable talking off the cuff, who talk passionately about their chosen subjects. Tell it like it is. Absolutely class. So
that's
that was
nice.
Very kind of Davey.
That's lovely of Davey, isn't it? That's really nice.
It is.
He'll be on the podcast in a few weeks' time, won't he? We're going to get him on, talk about a few
we
things.
Are. Yeah.
That's lovely also, of him, yeah.
It is. And he also has a question for us as well. Okay. And there's a little bit of a story that goes with this question. But Davey wants to know, if you were going to look like a serial killer, who would it be?
Well,
now, Cliff, I think that you've got a look of the murderous nurse Beverly Allett.
Do you? Is it the
yes.
tits?
No, it's the short hair and the brooding sort of face.
Okay,
that's what it is.
All right.
Brooding's probably the wrong word for that woman.
A sultry face. If I had to choose a serial killer look like? Who would I look like?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you I've just been watching that program, The Serpent, and you actually look like that fella. Oh, certainly in the program. So you're sorted. Mm-hmm. You're sorted. He's swarthy. Is that still an acceptable term?
Suave, sophisticated.
No,
all
not
the
suave. Swarthy, a bit dark. I don't think you're allowed to say it, are you?
I don't know. He said it now. It's too late.
I don't know what it means, to be honest. Just heard people say it, but I know what it. I know how it manifests itself.
Right. Okay. So I look like him. What's his name? This fella, do you know? Not sure.
I'll Google it while we're on. He's Turkish fella. I think the program's pretty good. I think you'd like it.
I was asked to watch it. I was asked to watch it by the wife, and I refused because all the football was on. So they've watched it, and I haven't.
I was watching the second episode there. I'm not sure I like it, to be honest. He's called Charles Subraj, con man and murderer. So yeah, essentially he operates in the Southeast Asia, Thailand, and that kind of area. Mm-hmm. And he befriends young couples who are like on these kind of hippie holidays to find themselves and all of that. And ends up winning that trust, getting them to, uh-huh. and basically he cons them out of whatever money and savings and all that they've got. Then he murders them. I'm not sure I'm wholly into it yet, but I like.
Yeah.
I do like the sunglasses that they wear, so might keep it on.
There's nothing better than winning somebody's trust. It's the best victory. You wouldn't know. I find it's the victory today. To beat all victories.
Yeah, that's but you've always been a very...
yeah. A very what?
It doesn't matter. It's
best left unsaid.
People are wary. People are wary around me, but you...
Well, that's because you look like Beverly Allen.
I, you know what? I've got no idea who she is.
She's the murderous nurse. Despicable person.
I don't know. The 90s. I understand the description, but I don't know who she is.
Right. Well, yeah, she's an awful person. But you do look like her. So, you know.
Well, but I think I'd like to be Aileen.
Surely Bundy. Really? Well, she looks a bit like a man
Bundy
anyway.
Who's a Jeffrey Dahmer?
Nah.
He looks like Stephen King, doesn't he?
A little bit, maybe. Yeah, he made zombies out of people, didn't he? Or he tried
it. Not nice. No, because it's not possible, is it?
That's not, Bridget, not at all.
Ramirez, what about Ramirez? Him?
He's got no teeth, doesn't he? He looks evil. Really
I might
evil.
Just go for a classic, Pol Pot.
Pol Pot's that singer.
How many times are we going to do that?
If you want to look like Pol Pot, no, but
don't dig up his patio. What else is happening? It's our friend Danny's birthday today.
It is, yes. There's a story attached to this this question though that I want again before
oh,
we talk
about, oh shit, yeah.
About
it did take a bit of a
life of its own, because it was on Twitter, and Davey was asking us on Twitter. He said that he had walked past somebody in the street who looked like Harold Shipman. wouldn't you want to change your appearance if you look like a serial killer? And I said, yeah, that's terrible, that. And we're getting into it and stuff, having a little bit of to and fro, back and forth and that. And then this person appeared. It was Harold Shipman saying, what's wrong with looking like me?
Shipman parody account.
It was. He's since changed his account into something else.
Just a normal man now, so he's obviously a normal guy who's been running a Shipman parody account.
He's not a normal man now. There was a documentary about boxing, and there's this crime guy who supposedly is big in boxing. He's changed his name to him.
Oh, has he? Whoever it is, weird.
So yeah, Harold Shipman popped up. and stuff. And I asked them to leave us alone. I don't have a pension. Leave us alone. He said,
he was quite sassy, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He was. But that was weird. That was really strange.
Well, that was odd. Mm-hmm. I think I was about to say happy birthday, Danny.
Yes, happy birthday, Danny.
Tell you what would be good with Danny. He messages us loads after every episode, which is great. I love the crack. Do it in public, Danny. People look like we're popular. Just do it. Anyway, something to think about as you enter your 40th year, old friend.
Just leave that with you, Danny.
No, happy birthday, mate. You're going to be on in a few weeks as well. So looking forward to that. Other friend news. Unfortunately, our mate Dan's not doing, he's not feeling very well. So he'll be listening at some point. I'm going to say get well soon, Dan, on here. But I hope by the time you listen to this, you're absolutely fine and you're out of hospital and stuff. So,
Get
back on your feet soon, mate. Yeah, brilliant, brilliant fella. And he also will be on again soon.
We've got a question from the incomparable Ainsley Jarvis.
Okay.
And he wants to know, why are you two such a big bunch of twats?
Probably because we couldn't give a flying fuck what you think, Mr. Jarvis.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Who is it?
I'd agree with
Who is
that.
It? Do we know?
I've just made that one up, to be honest. Okay. But if anybody can guess who Ainsley Jarvis is in a film, if anybody can guess what film he's from, you get extra marks.
Character in a film?
Yeah. He's a character in a film, yes.
Okay. Watch that. We're talking about some music, aren't we?
We are talking about some music, yes. And this is your choice this week. So
we're going to talk about singer, songwriter, frontman, Steve Mason, who people might know or might not know, but he was the singer in the Beta Band in the 90s, who were a real cult favorite that kind of imploded. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. He's since had a couple of kind of solo ventures, but under different names before going fully solo in about 2009, 2010, I think, with his first solo album, Boys Outside. He's had three other albums after that under his own name. Nothing for a couple of years. But he's one of my, if not my, like, kind of biggest favourite solo artist that's out there at the moment, or over the last 10 years or so. I absolutely love him. I've seen him loads of times. His music means a lot to us. It's got us through thick and thin and been big parts of my life here and there and everywhere. So I know what I think about him, but for you, I don't think you'd really heard any of his solo stuff before. We used to have some band stuff. What did you know of him? What did you think when I mentioned it?
When you first mentioned it, I didn't. I'll be honest, I didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. But since sort of I listened to all of his albums yesterday and a couple of EPs and stuff like that, I honestly think it's absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant. The thing that gets me is the albums are so different.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to sort of pin down what type of music it is. It's like an amalgamation, a mix of loads of different stuff, but it works. It just works. I was really sort of interested to listen to the lot because, you know, there was a lot of listening to do yesterday. Four albums and stuff like that.
Well, you didn't have to do it all in one day.
I didn't have to. That's me point. But I want to do after listening to the first album, which is kind of like new ordery type stuff, isn't it? But again, very difficult to pin down because there's lots of different sort of influences and stuff like that going on. I wanted to listen to the rest of the stuff. It wasn't like a pain that I had to. I wanted to. So I was really surprised that I really liked it, you know. I'd heard of the Beta Band and stuff like that from like High Fidelity and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, I was well impressed. Like I thought it was absolutely brilliant. But you are a big fan, aren't you?
Yeah, well, so just going back to the Beta Band, whatever you pronounce it, Beta Band in High Fidelity terms.
Beta.
So most people probably know that song or know who they are because of that, the High Fidelity film with John Cusack, based on the book.
Nick Hornby,
in it? Nick Hornby, at one point in the film, he goes, I'm now going to sell, five copies of the three EPs by the Beta Band. And he puts on a song, which is Dry the Rain, which is like their kind of masterpiece. Yeah. I think everybody probably thinks that. Do you remember listening to the Beta Band for the first time when we were about 14, 15? Maybe was 16 or so, I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I listened back to the three EPs album, and it was all sort of coming back. It was us sort of, listening to them and stuff like that. Especially, that song, which is the first song on three EPs, isn't it?
Which one? Dry the Rain, that one.
Dry the Rain.
Yeah. So that kind especially of kicked off the career, which is mad because it pretty much is a masterpiece, I think. And for that to be the first song on your first EP is mind blown. But also, the band totally imploded and couldn't live up to that early hype for whatever reason. So maybe the fact that that masterpiece was the first song and most people heard from them wasn't that good for the band in the long run.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's one of them things, isn't it? But you prefer to have it that way, I guess. At least had a masterpiece,
we used to go to our mate Paul Wilson's house and play on Championship Manager and stuff. And I would, we'd take turns with music and I would bring tapes around that I'd made or whatever. And one week I brought round tape that I had the Beta Band's third EP on, by which point I remember there was a lot of stuff in Enemy and all that stuff about them, but you couldn't get the first two EPs. They were super rare. But the third one was just out. You could get it. And I was like, right, I'm going to get it because if it goes the same way as these other two, I might never see it again. So I had no idea what it sounded like or anything. It's not, when you're 15 or 16 and you're like Oasis and Blur and Ocean Colour Scene and all of that, these immediate catchy songs that sound like the Small Faces or the Beatles or whoever. That third EP, I think it's called Los Amigos del Beta Bandidos or something like that. Something like that, anyway. The songs on it are Push It Out, Needle in My Eyes, Dr. Baker, and what's the last one on it? Anyway. I remember putting it on, and I just remember you hearing Push It Out and just be going, because it essentially is just him going, push it out, push it all out for about 4 minutes. And you've feel a bit what the fuck's this? And I totally got it because I can't say I immediately loved it the first time I heard it. And then they brought their first album out, and a second album, and a third album. And I think by the time the first album came out, Steve Mason, it was one of those Lars kind of situations when he was just like, it's fucking shit. Nobody should buy it.
Yeah.
I remember EMI going, what the fuck?
He told NME that it was shit. And all of his bandmates are sitting there, during the interview thinking, shit, you fuck with it.
Yeah.
But I think that's just the kind of guy he was, isn't he? I mean, he suffered from depression, didn't he? That's the thing.
Yeah.
I think one of the other band members, the original songwriter in the band, he suffered from depression as well.
And I love him.
And that's
as
why he sort of blames that off.
Yeah, I've seen that guy as well. I love him. He's still more idiosyncratic, shall we say. His stuff, he goes by the name Lone Pigeon, called Gordon Anderson. Seen him play a few different gigs. He ended up being in a band called The Aliens, which was him and the rhythm section from the Beta Band, back together. And I love that band as well.
Right.
So after the Beta Band split up, the original guy, who he actually was sectioned and very
in hospital and everything.
Yeah, a lot of ups and downs with that guy. He's this kind of Sid Barrett kind of genius that kind of comes and goes out of being in a band and then just disappearing for ages and stuff. Steve Mason and him were the founder members that kind of shared a flat, all his songwriting and Gordon Anderson's behavior and I think a lot of drug taking, a lot of lysergic acid and mushrooms and shit like that kind of rubbed off on him a bit, and he didn't kind of come out of it. There was one point where, before I moved here, actually, like I say, there's a couple of bits where he plays a big part of my life. Two things. Mm-hmm. The first one I'll mention now is I used to work for a newspaper, and it was restructuring, and they were going to let, there were six people in my job and in my role across three newspapers, and they were going to join them together and only have five people. So one person was going to lose their job. And I thought it would be me, because I was the newest person in that role, the youngest, the least experienced at it. I mean, I thought I was good at it, but also I'm the first one in and least experienced.
First one out, yeah.
And I also had a didn't necessarily get on with the big boss then, who I did at one point, but then took a bit of a dislike and do us for something. And I thought, well, both of those things together, I'm out. So what we had to do was basically go in front of like a Dragon's Den kind of panel where they would interview everyone.
Apply for your jobs.
Reapply for the job that I had, so there was this panel, there was a, she was on it, the one who we'd kind of fallen out with, and two other people that I hadn't worked with, different newspapers and all of that. One was the kind of one of the bosses of the whole company. And one of the questions was, and I knew what the question was coming, I must have known because I'd prepared it, was like, who is your hero? Who do you respect?
Yeah.
And I said Steve Mason. Obviously, they didn't really know who he was. So I described him a bit because I'd just seen him not so long before that at a gig in Edinburgh in a place called The Archers, which is essentially like an arch, like in under it, like a cave, like in a massive rocks. And there was this night where essentially he did an acoustic gig where he told stories and answered questions before and after, and then did an acoustic gig. And he told a story about how when he was in the Bitter Band, I don't know, they were sitting in EMI's office and they were like, Pepsi of offering £1 million. And this isn't the right story, but just for example, Pepsi want £1 million for Dry the Rain to be in their next album, the next advert. And he just went, Pepsi, I'm not interested in, like, my music's not commercial, it's not for sale, it's not I'm not gonna sell out, like it's art. And obviously, like you said, the other guys were probably like, fucking hell.
I mean, that's weird, because I actually listened to an interview with him today, and he sort of, you know, recounted that story when he was just about to sign a big contract and stuff like that. And some guy rang him up and said, oh, this advert for a car, whatever, to have your song in the advert. Yeah. And he just went, you know, no, I've got no interest in doing that at all. I don't want to sell out. That's what he was saying. I'm not gonna do it. Do you know what I mean? So I think that parts of the record company and stuff like that dropped them for the refusal to let that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that would have got them more exposure. Would have ultimately sold them more records and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. So here I was in front of this panel, essentially begging for my job, saying my hero's a man that just didn't sell out. Thinking, and the thing was, I'd already applied for the job out here. I had no idea I was ever going to get it or not, but I kind of, it was in the works. And I thought, you know what, fuck it, I'll stick to my guns. Like, I'm not going to beg for a job I've already got because somebody doesn't like us for a really irrational reason. So I think, basically, I got the job out here and it didn't make any difference. But it turned out that the main head of the company, like, liked me answer and didn't want to let us go. But obviously, at that point, I was like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm leaving anyway.
I mean, that's strange, because I mean, I know I talk about my dad quite a lot. I have on this particular episode anyway. But my dad had to do a very similar thing when he worked for Sunderland. Sunderland got relegated. And he worked for something called Football in the Community.
Yeah.
Which was like going to schools and coaching kids and stuff like that. I mean, it was really successful. I'm sure that they might have gone to your school when you were a kid.
Yeah, there'll be loads of people listening who know of it.
And mine. So, I mean, he had to do exactly the same thing. He had to go in and speak to Bob Murray and you know, the chief executive, and he applied for his job back.
Ficklin.
Ficklin. Ficklin. He always says that Ficklin said to him, well, football in the community has got to cut its own cloth, Stu. And my dad went, it's a charity. It's a charity. So in the end, my dad refused to do it and just left. Stuck to his guns.
Yeah, like Steve Mason's like second album was out. And the second album, Monkey Mind and the Devil's Time, which I think is I love his first album. It's very like a personal, low-key kind of electro-acoustic kind of thing. Like you say, a little bit New Order-y, but I don't know. It's like it's very stark electro. There's some quite emotional, like downbeat songs on there. But Monkey Mind and the Devil's Time, 20 songs. It's fucking right in your face. It's very political. He's standing up for it. He's like out of the blocks at that point. Like, and I think that don't give a fuck attitude, like, fuels that. And that was out, and I thought, you know what? Fuck it. Whatever. Like, there's some changes in my life. I'm feeling a bit better about myself. I feel like I've got a bit of confidence to take some inspiration from this guy, especially having just seen him in this intimate gig where he kind of told that story. It was fairly powerful. And thought, you know what? I'll just... I really respect this guy. Let's try and live by that mantra for at least now and see if it makes any difference.
And it obviously did for you, didn't it? And I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's worked out, I think.
That album's brilliant. It's almost like a concept album, really, isn't it? In a way that it's structured and stuff, isn't it? But I mean, if you can make a song, right, with a Formula One car, changing gears and accelerating and make it work, I think that's pretty genius. That,
yeah, yeah. Because
that's amazing. With some Portuguese comedy just going over and stuff.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's
good. What did you like then? Like you said, you listened to four albums, I'm guessing. What did you think? What stood out?
Well, I was just impressed. I was just impressed with his songwriting. I was impressed with his voice as well.
Yeah.
I'm very similar to you. I really enjoyed the second album. I think that's probably the one that I've listened to certain songs a little bit more than the other ones, but they're all good. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, the other ones, the earlier ones and the later ones aren't good, because they are. They're really good. He's just a very, very good songwriter.
Yeah.
I mean, the songs that are like, Fight Them Back and stuff like that, which is amazing.
That song's amazing, I think.
It is. It's absolutely class. Absolutely brilliant. And the thing is, like, when you listen to a certain song, you think it's going to go in one direction, and all of a sudden it kind of twists and goes somewhere else because of the music style, because of the different influences, I think. That one in particular, Fight Them Back, where he's sort of singing about, you know, give him a boot and all that.
Yeah.
Boot, a kick and a baseball bat and stuff.
Yeah. Amazing. Like I said, that album just has it like, right, fuck it. The things are going to shit. Let's try and take them on a bit. And he doesn't hold anything back.
No. It's very, like you said, it's very political. And obviously at that time it was like, you know, Gulf War and stuff like that. And Blair with his warmongering and stuff like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there's a bit at the end of the song where Blair says, he's talking about Libya, I think. He says, well, the thing about Libya is it's a gold mine. And that just shows what Blair was all about, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's just all about, you know, going to these, you know, countries in the Middle East and trying to screw them for what you can get.
Yeah. I saw him tour this gig in Newcastle, a tiny place, and he did Dry the Rain, and like right at the end, and it's just like, that was the first time. It's not the first time I've seen him do it, I think. Although I can't remember, I saw the Bitter Band play Tea in the Park and I was entirely underwhelmed by the performance. Like so it was a festival gig. It was just, didn't really do anything. I think it was towards the end of when there were things obviously weren't going that great for them. And, you know, I love the band. I have to say, like, I don't love the albums. I think he's probably right in that sense. There's some great songs on them, but I much prefer his solo stuff. There's a couple of albums he went under the name King Biscuit Time for an album and Black Affair for another album.
Yeah.
That one's a lot more electro. That's quite good if you like electro stuff. King Biscuit Time is probably a little bit more of an acquired taste. But yeah, like the solo stuff, I've seen him then, I've seen him at festivals, and this gig at the Archers in Edinburgh, where he was like doing this little acoustic thing and a little Q&A. And then he did a DJ set afterwards, and it was me and Jane. And I think we might have been the only people there, and we were in this kind of cave thing. Jane doesn't drink now, but she did at the time, so we'd obviously had a few drinks, just dancing to like this 80s electro pop. It was amazing, like Depeche Mode and stuff like that in a cave being played by one of my heroes. It was like, it's just an amazing night.
It's mental, isn't it?
It was like a private DJ. It was great. So I absolutely love them. Like, so yeah, that first album, Boys Outsider, I love, you know, I'm Just a Man and Lost and Found are two great songs on there, I think.
Boys Outside's really good as well. I mean, I think I'll listen to an acoustic one, because there's a lot of them that he's done acoustically afterwards.
There's a clip of him on YouTube playing that acoustic at some little studio thing, very simple. It's great. And his voice.
Yeah. It's amazing.
He's got a really kind of unique voice. I mean, it's his voice that kind of binds all this, his voice binds it all together, I think. Like you said, there's different styles, but you can tell it's him because of that. His songwriting quality in his voice. And then the second one you've got...
I mean, it's not a voice that's going to play like stadiums or anything like that, is it? But, you know,
he's not belting
it
out. You know, he's not a Jagger like running down a runway like belting stuff out. But, you know, I've seen him play festivals and... You know, the band does a good job, especially when he's playing stuff like Fight Them Back, and that's great. But also on the second album is A Lot of Love, which was mine and Jane's first dance at the wedding. And we've got like the lyrics on the wall in our place and stuff here. Well, not on the wall, but on a picture. Just love that song. The next album, Meet the Humans, is kind of refined, just took that style and took it on. I've just been reading an interview with him where he said he felt that was Steve Mason by numbers a little bit, which I can kind of see his point of view on. Because it doesn't do a huge about turn, but I don't think you need to do that as an artist or as a musician. You don't need to make every album different. But then the latest one,
The last two are, you know, pretty similar, aren't they? I think it's more poppy kind of stuff. Yeah. Especially compared to the second one, which is like, it's like I say, it's a bit of a concept album almost. Yeah.
The last one, About the Light, which is pretty much like a straight up like mod kind of R&B kind of sound, isn't it? Like this.
I mean, there's loads of influences in there that I sort of heard anyway. I mean, there's one song which is just is Pink Floyd's. You know, I think it's Fox on the Rooftop? Is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called. And it's just Time. It's just Time. The guitar's just Time from Dark Side of the Moon.
Well, the guitarist on that album is a guy, there's a band called Little Barry that I think you would like. That play like kind of like really high-powered kind of R&B with this really talented guitarist called Barry. And he's the kind of guitarist and the band leader on this album, which is why it has that, or one of the reasons it has that kind of feel. Whereas the previous ones are like Steve Mason doing everything himself for a couple of, you know, guys who are his band. This time he's got like, it's more of a band sound because you've got like a full band together that in this guy's influence. And I think you can tell. Little Barry is another recommendation. A bit more straight up rock and roll kind of stuff. But that guitar is great. And yeah, he's on that album. But yeah, I don't know if you read interviews with him. Like he's married, got a kid. And he's saying like, apparently got loads of like, he got some abuse being like, oh, well, this isn't as interesting as when you did those other albums. He's like, well, sorry, I'm not making sad songs for you anymore because I'm fucking happy and I'm married and I'm not trying to fucking jump off cliffs and shit like that anymore.
I've read a few interviews with him and I've listened to a few interviews on YouTube and stuff like that, and he just seems like a really down-to-earth guy, like a really nice guy.
I think that was the thing, because especially when the Bitter Band and stuff came out, and maybe when he first came out solo, obviously he was going through some like bad stuff.
Yeah.
Probably not his best self in interviews and stuff like that. But that was that thing. Like, I've seen him a few times when he's a lot happier and very candid and stuff like that, which, you know, I kind of could get on board with. I just think, yeah, well, fucking good on him. Good on him. He is normal. Like, he won't pull punches, that kind of thing as well.
No, he's an honest guy, isn't he? I come showing his music and stuff as well. But, I mean, obviously, he was a young man when he was in the Better Band and stuff like that, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely different when you get older, aren't you? You mature and stuff like that. But all the interviews that I've listened to, like I've just mentioned, he just seems like a top bloke, a nice fella. He talks a lot of sense, and he's talking about, you know, rather than going on social media and stuff like that and having to go at people on Twitter, it's better just, you know, walk around, give people a smile and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, he did get in a bit of... He did have a little bit of controversy where he had to go at Sophie Ellis-Bextor on Twitter.
Yeah, he said he mentioned that. He mentioned that.
I think he said he felt...
Is that not too easy to do in this world that we live in? Yeah, you know what I mean? He's just sent one tweet and then... He's been accused of being a misogynist or whatever, isn't the case.
There was a pylon and he said, look, fucking hell, like, yeah, I can see why you said that, why it was wrong.
Yeah, he said he shouldn't have done it, you know, but...
But I think one of the things with that was people were surprised that it came from him, like, because he's normally so well-respected and well-thought-of and doesn't say anything daft. I think part of it was that people were a bit surprised that he had done something like that. But we all make mistakes. We're all human, aren't we? And it's very easy to do on Twitter and say the wrong thing, you know. I don't think I certainly wouldn't hold anything against him for that. He was wrong, but he said he was wrong.
Yeah.
I think you're right. And also, like, talking about very open about his mental health struggles and stuff. I think good on. Not many people do that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he does. He does talk openly about that. And the good thing is that, you know, like I say from the interviews that I've listened to, he just seems like a normal guy. You know, just a normal, happy guy. And that's a good thing, because I obviously went through a lot of stuff. He disappeared for 2 weeks, didn't he?
Yeah, well,
like
I read
2006
an interview,
or something, he disappeared.
Read an interview in The Guardian where the guy's called, I was in his house interviewing him about his new album, and by the time I got back to my apartment, he had gone missing and nobody knew where he was. Like, it just shows you how quickly things can turn or how you can...
Nobody knew where he was.
Yeah, and how you can be with somebody and think everything's all right, and then, you know, as soon as you turn your back, they're not all right, and you don't know, you know. So I think him talking about that stuff and being like, yeah, we're even lost and found, like the lyrics Lost and Found at the Base of a River is about if jumped in Loch Lomond.
I think what he said was he was just driving around for 2 weeks looking for trees to crash into at high speed. You know, I mean, that's awful, isn't it?
Pretty grim. But then I think that's where you're at.
That a lot of it came from like the breakup of the Beta Band, wasn't it? Because when they left the record company, they were in massive debt, weren't they? Apparently, they owed the record company $1.2 million or something like that.
Which is mental.
insane. How's that possible? It's strange to me how an artist can sort of leave a record company, own their money.
No, I agree. Mad, I'm sure they agree as well. But you get an advance on a record. You're the next big thing. You're going to sell millions. There's £1 million to do whatever you want with, because you're so nailed on to make millions of pounds, because you just everybody's saying you're a genius. You take ages to make an album. It doesn't sound like what people think it's going to sound like. And then before it comes out, you tell everybody not to buy it because it's a load of shit. You're never going to make that money back. And I know they didn't spend $1 million on that one album, but you can see how the money might not get a return on it. And if in your contract is, right, you need to pay it back, then...
It's like part of his depression almost, isn't it? It's like self-sabotage. He's almost sabotaged his own band or what have you. But I just think it's just odd that he's left the record company, and then they've gone, you're £1.2 million, when all he's done is gone, no, I won't accept. I won't have me songs on this car advert or whatever, because, you know, it's not my thing or whatever.
Yeah. No, I agree. And
you know, he's really done.
He stuck to his guns.
He's stuck to his guns.
He's still going. He's married. He's got a kid. Mm-hmm. That makes him happy. He's still bringing out albums. He's still got people who love him. Who's to say he did the wrong thing, even if it put him through some tough times at the time? Yeah. So, yeah, I think I said it was the rhythm section that went on to be in the Aliens. I'm not sure. I think one was the keyboardist and drummer, I think. Anyway, I love this guy. Right. I like the bitter band. I think you've liked listening to the albums. There's also a dub version of the first album with Dennis Bovell, I think, which is really good, like proper, like,
yeah,
dub, really heavy but chilled version of that album. That's good. I would also recommend The Aliens, which are a bit more like kind of halfway between Beta Band and these and Steve Mason. And once you're into that, there's a whole load of offshoots and related artists and stuff like that that you can listen to that bring me unbridled joy. basically all of the stuff that the Beta Band, Steve Mason and Lone Pigeon, everything that's around those artists, I like all of it. There's loads of stuff to explore. So once you get into it, you might find that you're looking at, oh, who's that in that band? And then branching off a little bit.
Yeah, it branches off to other places.
So, yeah, we've got music. I got this one sorted out, so...
You did?
Up yours.
Oh, is that the way it works now? It's not a collaborative thing.
I mean, you normally sort the music out, but I'm in a group on Facebook about shoegaze music, which is I don't know why I'm in it, to be honest. I just wanted to try and get some suggestions for new music, and in the last few years I've really got into kind of shoegazy kind of music, which is a shit name for a genre, isn't it? But
like, it's daft. What does it mean?
I think it's like was sort of a bit, because when Ride and My Bloody Valentine, those guys came out, they had so many pedals, they were always looking down because there were so many, many effects on their guitars that they were always looking down at their feet for what pedals they were pressing. I think that's where it originated. This band, I think, is really good. New band from Verona in Italy, called You Nothing. And the song's called Reflexi. And it's out now. It came out on the 1st of February, so we're timely. And it's from an album called Lonely Lovely, which is coming out later this year. I think this is great. Really, really like it. My kind of thing. This is the kind of stuff I listen to at the moment, to be honest. So it was a pleasant surprise.
I listened to it. I thought it was good too. Yeah, I was well impressed that you managed to get a good one.
I've done it. I'll take a back seat now for another year. I'll sit back.
Just leave it from now. Leave it to me. Leave it to me for now.
Well, I know we've got some good stuff lined up as well, so I'm more than happy to do that. So, thanks, everyone. Happy birthday, Danny. Get well soon, Dan. Davey, again, just say your name again because I just keep mentioning it. And everybody else, Leon, Luke, everyone who's messaged us, been in touch, asked us shit. Thank you. I think everybody who listens to our podcast, or most people, will like Steve Mason. So if you haven't heard it, then go for it. If you have heard it and like him, then join in. Let us know what your favorites are and all that shit. Follow us on Twitter at FCircusPod. We're on Facebook. You can listen to us pretty much everywhere and on a new place called Verbal, which I need to tell you about.
Verbal?
Yeah, very
exciting. Verbal Kent.
Yeah, that's it. Playing us out tonight is You Nothing, which reflects you. See you later, pop pickers.
Bye.
Set me free.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.